This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Good to be with you today. Matt and Patrick here today. Jam-packed full today, Patrick. Dr. Joseph Eastman is going to join us once again. He is the doctor we had on that does the forecast models for Omicron. He wants to give us an update. We're going to talk to him coming up at about 4:30. Our Democrat of the day is one of my favorite people, period. It's Senator Lindsey Port, 56, Senate District 56. Which kind of overlaps a little bit with our Democrat of the day from yesterday, Representative Kayla Berg, who's 56B. She, of course, is the senator down there. We'll talk to her about her first term in the Senate and the election coming up here, because once again, kind of the odd quirk there with the redistricting, they have to go back in and go get reelected again this upcoming session. So a lot to be said there. Patrick, how are you today, my friend?
Doing good. I'm a little cold like all of us, but doing good.
Are you sure? You remember, I thought I had a cold forever, and then I had, I got shocked with the Omicron thing.
No, I meant I am cold.
Cold. You're cold? It's Minnesota. I went grocery shopping this morning. By the way, my banana's already turning brown. Thanks. Thank you. Thank you, winter. It's always a nice thing. And don't get me wrong, we were going from crispy to extra crispy this morning. But it's, you're Minnesota. You're a hearty person, right?
Well, yeah, but that doesn't mean I can't say it now and then.
Did you hear about the conversation Brett and I had yesterday?
I'd missed that.
You're probably good. I mean, I'm not going to shy away from that. That's probably a good thing. So yesterday, we talked about, do you have a box at home that you've put in a corner maybe 10 years ago that all of a sudden is like, oh, yeah, I should probably go through that. And all of a sudden it's like a little time capsule of your life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did that. Had one that I think what had happened is we started having kids. And so some of my stuff just went into a box on a shelf and, kind of forgot about it. Well, I decided, well, let me go through this. And I found some old pictures, a lot of them dealing with my time in the military. So this is 1989, 1990, 1991, 92, 93, when I went to Brown and I got my broadcasting degree, stuff like this. And one of the photos, and we talked about how there are some weird photos where I look a little bit like Rick Astley, together forever, never going to give you up. I mean, but that was, that was 1990. A lot of people look like him, I was in Europe, for God's sakes. I mean, you either look like Depeche Mode or you look like, Rick Astley. It was one of the your two choices. There is one photo I took, which is, it's a little beefcakey, all right? Now, I'm not going to post this photo on social media. Are you kidding me? No. But for some reason, I told Brett at some point during the show today, at some point, I don't know when, I might have to start drinking before I do this. At some point before during the show today, we are live streaming the show. You can watch the show. It's radio for your eyes. You just have to go to Facebook and go to the Facebook feed for AM 950 Radio, or go to Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show. You can watch it there too. At some point today, I will take this image and somewhat get it close to the camera. I just want to give you a little bit of a look at it. Nothing much that, it's not going to come back, bite me back. Yeah, I look good in it. I look good in it. But I will say it is, 30 some years ago. I went through a phase with the camera back then. And trying to explain taking photos back then to people today with cameras, it's like, I'm going to take 57 photos of me right now, and one of them I'm going to post on Instagram. And they do it. And everyone does it. Have you ever gone to someone's house, and there, I'm going to guess, Patrick, it's an older person's house, where you've looked through a photo album, an actual photo album, and seen photos of the family where like two or three people in the family photo have eyes closed? Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Yes. We didn't have 50 photos back then. You got what you got. And so the question had to be is, well, is, you know, Billy Jr.'s eyes closed in this one enough to negate it from the family photo book? Well, it's the only time we ever had, you know, Aunt, you know, Mary and Uncle Bill there. So, yeah, we'll have to put it in there. So you used to go look at people's photo albums and they were just, you know, a cavalcade of horrors compared to what you get today. I mean, every photo, I mean, there's, you know, some guy, you know, picking his nose, a guy blinking, or red eye. Holy gosh, you couldn't correct red eye back then. So it's like all of a sudden you look like you've got, you know, Children of the Corn there. You know, you just kind of took whatever photo you took and you did it. I went through a phase where I took a bunch of photos. Yeah, some of them, most of them I threw out because I'm like, okay, no, I do not want. I mean, if you think the Beefcake photo of me from 1991, I think it is, if that's going to be embarrassing, just imagine, and I'm willing to show this photo, imagine what the other photos look like. Yee. So they're gone. I've gotten rid of them. they're never to be seen again. But I went through a phase and I just took a bunch of, you know, the kind of photos like I was pondering something, looking into a distance, but it looked more like I had gas, you know, like the taco wasn't agreeing with me, you know, that sort of thing. And so it just didn't work. But I do have this one photo I will share. And then I'm going to share the Rick Astley photo where I look exactly. I've got some hair that's going high in that one. I mean, it is high and tight. And let me rephrase that. High, tight, and really white. Yeah, that's it. It is not a pleasant look for me, but it is. It was what we looked like back then. So I will share that one tomorrow before we get into the Friday song, which I can already tell you, we already know what the Friday song is going to be. Never going to give you. Oh, never going to give you up. A lot to get to today. Dr. Joseph Eastman coming up. And if you want to see the photo, the Beefcake photo of Matt from 1991, I will show it at some point on the live stream. Somewhat. I don't know how much I'm going to show, but you'll see it. Okay. It's not like I'm naked. I mean, I am wearing a towel. Am I wearing a towel in that? Or is that just kind of some like weird leg fur? No, I'm wearing a towel. That's a towel. It's black and white too. So artsy. Yeah. It's, I know they can't see it on the camera. See it? There you go. That's disturbing. Why are your eyes watering, Patrick? It's not that bad.
I'm already terrified.
You should be. That is just not natural. That is not, yikes. All right. We'll see it. All right. I've painted myself in the corner. Bon appetit. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Thursday's COVID-19. Let's do the Minnesota coronavirus update. We'll start with that since we got Dr. Joseph Eastman coming up here a little bit later on. Thursday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 11,440 newly reported cases, 78 newly reported deaths. Now, one of the things that they've started pointing out, and this is kind of in lieu of these high numbers, they want to kind of let people know that overall, things look like they might be plateauing with Omicron here in Minnesota. We'll talk to Eastman here coming up, like I said, in a bit about that. But what you've started seeing is people trying to explain, well, when we talk about the new COVID case count, a lot of these tests, some of these tests are more than a week old and they're finally just getting the results. So it's you're going to get, and as a matter of fact, that's actually most of them. So what we're looking at is a delayed test response. We're not necessarily seeing the tests from yesterday, per se, or the day. In this case, the tests include the data that was reported in the 24-hour period ending at 4 a.m. on Wednesday. So it'd be Tuesday to Wednesday. So it's not necessarily just tests taken in that. It was just these were the ones that were reported that day. And they're saying this because, like I said, they're saying, okay, Omicron is not rising as much, although I say the test positivity rate, I'll get to that in a second, seems pretty high. But still, they're saying that what they're seeing is the tests that are taken more recently, when you just look at them, there definitely seems to be either a plateauing or even a slight dropping off. And I'll get the real response from Dr. Eastman. I trust him when we talk to him coming up here in just a little bit. But it also, I did want to make sure I mentioned, yesterday we had, what, 44,000 cases, no, you know, because of the long holiday week finally getting reported. but we didn't have a lot of deaths. I think when they look at the death reporting, that especially after a long weekend, that's coming the next day. So the big number for new cases was yesterday. The big number for new deaths is today. 78. 78 dead. That's the report of COVID. 78. The state's COVID-19 death toll now is 11,115. Among the deaths reported today are a child aged 10 to 14 in Dakota County. We'll talk a little bit more about that coming up here. A person aged 25 to 29 in Hennepin County, an individual 30 to 34 in Anoka County. The death of the child is the first in Minnesota in the 10 to 14 age bracket, and the eighth person under the age of 19 to die of COVID-19, according to the Minnesota Department of Health. On Wednesday, the Mayo Clinic held a press briefing in which it said it expects the reported cases to remain high before peaking as soon as next week. However, because reported cases lag, what's happening in real time, the Omicron wave may have already peaked in Minnesota. Going back to what I was saying earlier about how when they look at the reported numbers, those are the numbers that just get reported that day. It's not the tests that were taken that day. So Minnesota's test positivity rate on a seven-day rolling average, though, is 23.7. Another record high in Minnesota. So that, at least from what I understand about basic numbers, leads me to believe that it might not be coming down. We might be plateauing, but for that number to be plateauing, it's got to be consistently pretty bad up there right now. So we're close to a one out of every four tests coming back positive. We're pretty close to that right now. And so, you know, and unless those numbers drop dramatically, I don't know. Anything over 10% puts Minnesota in the high-risk threshold for community transmission of the coronavirus. Through January 19th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 1,629. That's up from 1,592. And by my math here, it'd be 37 more cases. Reported on January 18th, of those hospitalized, 247 people are in intensive care. That's actually up from 239. We haven't had many days with the Omicron wave where the numbers have gone up as far as ICU patients. Today is the definitely one that that is the exception. There are 1,382 non-ICU cases. That's up from 1,353. So basically almost 29 more cases there. The latest hospital capacity data shows there are 31 staffed adult ICU beds available in the entire state. And there is also only 15 pediatric ICU beds available in the entire state as well. As of January 18th, the state reported that 3,813,784 people have completed at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,573,445 people have completed the vaccine series. The state has administered 1,952,260. Patrick, off the top of your head, and I don't know if you remember this, I thought it was two months. If you got the first shot, you had to get the second shot within a certain amount of a window of time, correct?
I know what you're talking about, but I can't confirm that either. Yeah, I think it was about 3 months.
Had to get that second one. So I'm wondering of the people, which is the difference here, is 240,000 people that have their one shot versus the two shots. That's the differential between those two numbers, 240,000. I'm wondering how many of those people got the first shot and then just never got the second shot. And it's been months, maybe even a year since they got the first shot. Don't know. The percentage of Minnesota's population, we haven't talked about this in a while. The percentage of Minnesota's population that have completed the vaccine series based on the age group. Now, these are the ones that are completed. So both shots, 5 to 11-year-olds, 28%. 12 to 15-year-olds, 59%. Nicely done there. 16 to 17-year-olds, 62%. 18 to 49-year-olds, 66%. That's completed. Nicely done. 77% for 50 to 64-year-olds and 65-plus, 93%. The total population, now that does include people that are 5 and younger, is 64.2%. The total amount of cases is 1,204,929. Yikes. And mentioned earlier, a child from the Twin Cities and a school staff member are among Minnesotans to have recently died of COVID. The Minnesota Department of Health reported both deaths on Thursday in its regular updates. The child who died was between 10 and 14 years old and lived in Dakota County. The Minnesota Department of Health said they were the first child that specific age bracket to die from COVID-19 in Minnesota. According to the Minnesota Department of Health, COVID has killed a total of 8 people age 18 and under. Less information is known about the school staff member. Minnesota Department of Health weekly report shows one additional COVID death among pre-K-12 school staffers. It brings the total number of school staffers that have died since the start of the pandemic to 20. A total of 334 school staff members have been hospitalized due to COVID, 61 requiring ICU treatments. The state has recorded 3 school-related student deaths. A few cities across the state have reinstated public mask mandates. In the case of the Twin Cities, vaccination and testing requirements are sit down in a restaurant or a bar. Some schools facing pandemic-related staffing shortages have shifted to online or hybrid learning options. Meanwhile, strained hospitals and clinics across the state have issued plea after plea for people to take precautions, with some even restricting visitors and instituting vaccination policies. This goes back to what I said earlier. We have into the family of this child that died of COVID. There's nothing I can say that can convey the sadness and the loss, from myself, just all my best to you and your family. I feel the same exact way about everyone that's passed away. There's nothing I can say. It's horrible. And I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. I also feel sorry for the staff member who passed away, school teacher. I'm not saying that these people wouldn't have died if there was, remote learning going on or mandatory face masks or mandatory vaccination policies. I can't say that for sure. What I can say is it'd probably be likely that a lot less people would be dead and a lot less people would be sick. Part of the problem that we have right now in our country, and it is a huge one, is we have way too many people who think the bigger priority is limiting inconveniences versus stopping needless suffering. And when a school district says, we're not going to shut down, we're not going to go to remote learning, we're not going to have face masks, what they're actually saying is this: we are perfectly okay with 10% or more of the students in the school getting sick, as well as also as much staff getting sick. And we know that some people will probably die because of COVID that was transmitted to them via this school district. A family member, a staff member, God forbid a student. But they know that. And what they said is, you know what? Sure, a few people are going to die. A few people will be on ventilators. Okay, fine. A few people will be in the ICU. Okay, whatevers. A few people will go to the hospital, maybe not have to go into the ICU, but still have to amass medical debt because they had to go to the hospital because of COVID. And what you have said is, I don't care. I don't want people to be mildly inconvenienced. And even if it was a major inconvenience, you still are saying that human life, human suffering, those don't matter to you. Just limiting inconvenience. We need to stop the selfishness. We absolutely need to stop the selfishness. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break, come on back. More Minnesota Coronavirus Update when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
January is Cervical Cancer Awareness Month, and American Indian women in Minnesota are twice as likely to develop cervical.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Phil is in New York City, and he's kind enough to join us today. Hi, Phil. Thanks for holding. I appreciate the phone call.
Yeah, hi, Matt. You hit the nail on the head talking about people feeling inconvenienced. I have two quick examples. I have a friend that works in a school in the South, and they don't care. They don't care that the kids get sick. They're not willing to even do anything to address the issue. I have another friend who just got sick, even though she's been vaccinated. She works in a firm, and her coworkers don't want to be inconvenienced by wearing masks. They go, I don't care. You know, I'm not going to wear a mask. And this is what's driving this whole thing.
No, it is. It's you know, it's people. How about this, Phil? It's people that feel as if they have the right to go, even though they could be sick, to go into the office and sicken everyone else. Because how dare you say I can't go and do that, even though I might be sick with COVID?
Exactly.
Yeah.
In fact, my friend, what she's had to do, she has a back door that goes out to the parking lot from her office. So she's closed herself off from all the other folks. Anybody who wants to come see her has to come in through the back and through that entranceway.
Well, it's about the best way to do it. It's, you know, it's selfishness. We live in an age of extreme selfishness, and that is what is you know, doing as much damage as COVID, if you ask me. Thanks, Phil. I appreciate the phone call. All my best to everyone out there in New York City. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I will say here, I'm a little sad here because we are getting word today that someone we have had on the air a few times, I'm going to actually try to get Director Ayersman back on with us again before she retires. One of the leading voices and most recognizable faces of Minnesota's response to the COVID-19 pandemic announced her retirement on Thursday. Ayersman, who has spent more than 30 years in public health, will retire on February 2nd. She is currently the Minnesota Department of Health's Infectious Disease Director. Serving as the Director of Infectious Disease Division has been one of the great honors of my life, Ayersman said in a statement. Like so many people who have worked in a job they love, I have mixed feelings about saying goodbye. That said, it has been my privilege to work with the amazing team, and I have every confidence I am handing the baton to the best in the business. Minnesota Department of Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm called her a communicator and a leader who has helped guide Minnesota through many difficult public health challenges. Governor Walz referred to Ayersman as an extraordinary public servant who has left a legacy that will impact years to come. Among the public health challenges Ayersman has responded to are, of course, the COVID pandemic, the 2017 measles outbreak in Minnesota, Ebola preparedness in 2014, and the H1N1 influenza pandemic of 2009. Over the past 2 years, Ayersman's voice became a familiar sound to anyone who listened to the COVID-19 update broadcast on Minnesota radio and television stations. Ayersman, of course, she was on the air with us numerous times. Ayersman will be replaced by Emily Emerson, who is the current assistant director in the Infectious Disease Epidemiology Prevention and Control Division at the Minnesota Department of Health. Emerson will carry an interim label while the Minnesota Department of Health conducts a national search for a new director. Director Ayersman, I want to say from the bottom of my heart, thank you very much. You saved lives. I know that the Republicans hate you and want you gone and send out as much disinformation. I know that there are people that are cultivating hate and distrust in you and your department and your agency. It is mind-numbing in these days and ages why people are vilifying you as they have. Because at the end of the day, what your legacy is going to be is you saved human lives. You saved numerous lives through your actions, through your recommendations, through your policies. You saved human beings. And for that, we owe you a debt we cannot pay you. You will be missed. You have been, you know, I've said this about a few people at the Minnesota Department of Health. You are truly an example of government working for the people. I was stunned, saddened, but the reality is, I mean, she's been there for a long time and she's gone through some pretty serious challenges. I hope you are. I don't know if you're moving on to a different job or if you are fully retiring, but all my best, Director Ayersman. You have been sensational. And from the bottom of my heart, I truly say thank you very much. Thank you so very much for all the work you have done, because you have saved lives. And that's an undeniable statement. That is an undeniable statement. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. When we do return, we are going to be talking with Dr. Joseph Eastman. We are going to be talking with him. He's done models on Omicron. We'll talk about his latest models and where he thinks this is going to be heading as we are dealing with this latest surge. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. We had Dr. Joseph Eastman on with us a few weeks ago. I was going to have him on last week, and then I had COVID, so we decided to postpone that. But he is kind enough to join us today. He is a scientist. He's worked with NASA, LTER, Colorado State. He's currently on the University of Texas Austin COVID modeling team, and he is kind enough to join us today to talk about the models that he has been producing as it refers to Omicron and coronavirus. Dr. Eastman, thank you very much. I appreciate the time as always.
Well, I appreciate you having me back, Matt.
My pleasure. You are always welcome back. I appreciate science. I think science is good.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. What a few now.
What a concept in this day and age. Oh, wow. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, don't look up.
Since the last time we talked, we let's not pull any punches. The COVID models you were putting out when we last talked were fairly stark, looking at possibly a 2-month stretch of Omicron with a large portion of the state being infected. Since that time, it seems like a lot of models have pulled back. What are your models looking like right now in regard to the Omicron wave?
Yeah, I'm seeing the same general tendency in my models, which I think is a good thing.
And, yeah.
You know, as the closer we get to the peak, sometimes you worry if they all converge on the same answer, and then you're going, boy, what did I mess up now? But all the models are pretty consistent. As we get more data and we're able to calibrate some of the parameters a little better, we're getting a better grip on it, because this has really been one of the toughest variants that I've had to introduce into the model yet.
If I can ask, what was one of the things that changed in the models that you were seeing as far as numbers? And I don't mind, you can get very sciencey here. I don't mind about that. What came in on this that changed kind of how it going from this, you know, longer, maybe a 2-month spread down to, okay, we might actually hit the peak earlier?
Yeah, the closer we've gotten, and we've gotten more data on some of the what I call a transmission matrix that it kind of goes through the different demographics and sees how susceptible that population is, you know, 65 and older and 18 and younger and in between there. And as we got more data and, thank God, more testing, we're able to get a little bit better grip on what is going on and who's more susceptible. I think that's had some of it. The big push in vaccines also has helped. I mean, you got to give Biden administration credit for what they've done. It went from, you know, just about 2 million to over 200 million in a year. So we're starting to see the fruits of that labor come true. And I don't know, just a personal observation, I'm starting to see a lot more people wear masks.
Oh, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I mean, it does seem as if in the last 2 weeks that, you know, people that might have been hesitant are all of a sudden, oh, no, I'm wearing a mask now.
Yes. Yes, I know it. When they suddenly see that, oh, boy, the peril is here at my doorstep, that maybe I should wear a mask. I think it hits home. And hopefully, you know, forecasts like I show you, hopefully people can see that, where, you know, you literally see pixels covering up your house, you know, mm-hmm. when I show a map of Minnesota. That's all fine the detail we get down to. And I got a lot of people reacting to me, and there's like, you know, that really hits home, instead of seeing a line graph that, you know, gives me an idea when it's coming and the number of people, but I don't know how close to home it's going to get. And here up in the Front Range, I can see Highway 169 with a low infection pass on it when I go through my model simulation. It's crazy.
I want to drive people to, if we can, I want to drive people to your Twitter account, because you do post a lot of great information there. JLEROLLBLUES, Jelly Roll Blues is where you'll find him, Dr. Eastman there. And he posts a lot of great information. I mean, are we going to see this? I mean, you talk about outstate Minnesota How are your models looking at what has happened with past waves, which is metro area gets it heavy, then outstate gets it heavy? Will this follow the same trend?
Yes, this should. Although, because it's so contagious, the outstate portion is going to die out a little bit slower than it has in the past, just because the transmission matrix is so high compared to Delta. So you see that decay quite a bit slower, and actually in the animation that I show, you'll see that too. If people log on to my account or look at my Twitter account, they'll be able to see just what I'm talking about. And we're looking by June. I got my fingers crossed. That's kind of where everything is going to kind of go down into what I would call a background pool. It's still going to be there. Really interesting. A doctor, a geneticist, gave a talk about 2 months ago, and she was saying that maybe this is the first strain of the variant that is starting to look like more like an influenza type of virus. You know, where we're going to have to live with it. But, you know, I don't want to minimize it because influenza is 0.408 mortality rate. You know, that's what, 1/1000th of a percent mortality. Whereas we're looking at with Delta 0.0125 or 1.25%, quite a bit difference. We still don't have a good handle on Omicron's mortality rate. And, and then we got the long-term COVID impacts. We don't have that with the flu. So you'll see people start to try to minimize this a little bit and say, oh, we're going to be all right. It's going to be just like the flu. Well, no, that's not quite true. So you got to take it with a little grain of salt.
I want to get back to, and we'll definitely, I want to talk about two things you just mentioned there, but I want to go back to the spread vector here. This is one of the things that I imagine is wildly difficult when you're looking at something of this nature, is that we knew that Omicron was more susceptible, but I think we've gotten down to the point where it's clear that, and I don't want to make it seem too simplistic, but it's the kind, this variant seems like you can walk past someone in a freaking airport and you're going to get it. It's not like they said in the past where it's like, 10 minutes in a room with someone and you're likely going to get it. Now it seems like this one is really almost a minimal contact and this goes. I mean, trying to figure that into a model has got to be, especially when it's a varying level, you don't quite know how contagious it is. It's got to be wildly difficult.
And like we were talking about earlier, you're precisely right. We are seeing the ability to model this better, and we're kind of pulling things back down to not a reasonable level by any means, but it's not looking like 15-20% of the population walking around with this thing at any given time, but more like around 10%, maybe a little bit more than that. So, as we get this contact matrix down, there's a lot more confidence in our models. And I put out one today on these ensembles. I'd like to put out a little more to kind of show you the spread in these models and how we got to look at it. And you can't just have one forecast. You got to have, I got 21 forecasts going at one time. And I look at those, they kind of give me more skills to predict what's going to happen by varying the parameters in the initial population and stuff like that. We're feeling a little better.
Okay. One of the things that's interesting is, and I've seen this coming down, is that a lot of people, when they're talking about the amount of positive tests, is they're coming down, they're saying, well, one thing you need to keep in mind is it's not all the tests from that one day. That some of these tests are a few days old, maybe even over a week old. And we're finally getting results reported on them. But at the same time, we're seeing what I think the test positivity rate right now is 23.7. Those two things seem to try to contradict each other. When people try to say, it might be plateauing out and maybe starting to go on the downside. Well, that's one thing. But then shouldn't the test positivity rate number start showing some level of at least starting to drop?
Yeah. There's a couple little factors that are going into that too. a lot of people are not even going in for COVID that are testing positive for it. Mm-hmm. And I think people are a little more aware once they get a little sniffle, it's like they're testing right now. So, you know, your percent positivity is going to kind of coincide with the number of people going in that think they probably might have it, and also people that they don't even know they got it. And they're going in, and, you know, hospitals, mandatory, you got to test the person. So that's part of what we're seeing in the high positive return rates on the test. So,
you'd mentioned vaccines. You'd mentioned, like, influenza. You know, I don't think anyone, I mean, I get a flu shot. Well, I got the flu one time about 30 years ago, and I'm never skipping a flu shot ever again. It kind of puts you in perspective. I mean, so are we looking at, we couldn't end up having a situation where we just have to have a regular annual or maybe biannual COVID shot?
I really think that is where we're headed, you know, because the seriousness compared to influenza is, it potentially so much more serious. And, you know, we're basically sending our kids to school in a petri dish right now, too, which is very irritating to me.
Yes, it is.
Personally, we know this peak is pretty much, we're pretty certain it's coming. Why can't we just close down schools for a couple of weeks, you know, and say, let's ride this out. Maybe we got to go a little longer, but, you know, we got a pretty good grip on what this window is going to be, and there's absolutely no reason we can't. We've been in this for 2 years. Why can't we wait another 2 weeks?
Because things have changed. They've gotten to the point now, Doctor, where it's like I said, it's limiting inconvenience has become the larger priority versus trying to stop needless suffering or needless death. That is the reality, is that we have just said, you know, sure, we could do this, but it's inconvenient. And so it's, we are ruled by selfishness, and the end result is people are dying, people are getting sick, and people just shrug their shoulders and say, what are you going to do? Well, we could save them, but, oh, I guess we can't do that. So,
yeah, inconvenient truth, you know. And you grew up around the times when I grew up, and, you know, we all felt a sense of community and camaraderie.
Yes.
Back then, and we're all in it together, and now it's like, oh, me. It is very frustrating.
I don't care how many people die. I want my 2-for-1 jalapeno popper platters, and that's just that. And it's just really, this is America. Thank you very much, Donald Trump. One last thing I wanted to touch on here with you, and you mentioned this earlier. There have been some people who have said, not just with Omicron, but for COVID overall, that indeed for years, maybe even decades to come, especially in these areas, in these communities where there has been very limited vaccination or less than 50% vaccination, that COVID is going to be a recurring illness that is going to come through kind of like measles outbreaks and chickenpox outbreaks used to, that it's just something that we're going to have to get used to, especially in the low vaccinated communities, that there's going to be a fairly high transmission rate that's still going to be there. Is that what you are forecasting too? Is that in the years to come, that in areas that are, you know, kind of like Brainerd area, they don't have a lot of vaccinated people over there. Is that an area that
right,
for in 10 years, they could still be seeing COVID outbreaks?
I yes, definitely. It's going to remain in the background. I mean, I can run this thing out with no new variant, and you'll see it's going to persist. It's always going to have what we call a susceptible population that it can feed off of. It's always going to be there if everybody's not vaccinated. And then, of course, other countries, it's always going to be stewing there, and really susceptible in countries with high HIV populations and things like that. So it is going to be here. And that's why I haven't heard much lately about the Pfizer working on the Omicron, you know, specific vaccination. But when you start looking at some of the long-term effects and things, that probably should run to completion at least. So that can be part of the whole vaccination delivery system too. So I agree, though. That is where we're heading. little epidemic pockets here and there are going to pop up just like the measles. And we've seen that as more of the anti-vaxxers make themselves more vocal and more people follow that kind of stuff. We saw that happen.
And they're not going to go away. I mean, there's some guy, you shared a model with us, and some idiot just tweeted, it's like, masks don't work, boosters and vaccines don't work. You know, they're only going to get more belligerent and scream louder because they just... This is the hill they have decided to die on. And it's like everything with, especially in the far right circle, Trump, is that they believe they just cannot comprehend. They have banked everything on the lies that they believe. And, you know, the further we go down the road, they're going to just get louder and scream louder and think that that's effective counterpoint to the entire established medical community.
Exactly. When did screaming louder become winning an argument? I never figured that one out.
Okay, okay. Welcome to cable news.
You're darn right.
Yeah, I always look back at Crossfire when that was on CNN. And I said that was the beginning of it when people just started yelling at each other and they thought it was good. Good. That was the beginning of it because after that it was. You know, and now what do we have? We've got, you know, idiots showing up at school board meetings screaming, I'm going to murder you and your kids in the home if you shut the school down. And the school, because they're terrified and they don't quite know what to do, is going along with the psychopaths and the howler monkeys. And it really is kind of disturbing.
I love the way you hammer these points home on your show. It's greatly appreciated.
I greatly appreciate you. Let's tell you what. Let's try to have you back, if not next week, the week after. Get another update on the models and see how things are doing. Okay.
I will, and in the meantime, I'll keep looking for more variants of concern and. Make sure we don't have any of those coming down the pipeline.
I always appreciate that. I want to, once again, it's Jelly Roll Blues up on Twitter, JelleRollBlues. Go follow him. Dr. Joseph Eastman, kind enough to join us to talk about his COVID models. Doctor, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
I appreciate you too, Matt. Thanks a lot.
Take care. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Thank you very much, Dr. Joseph Eastman. And, of course, once again, spotlight that interview. We'll have that up here a little bit later on, if not already. Patrick's pretty, Johnny on the spot on that stuff. One last story here I want to put out here. And it's not necessarily a Minnesota coronavirus update, but it kind of connected here. Walls today announced a series of proposals to expand economic opportunity in Minnesota as part of the Walls Flanagan budget to move Minnesota forward. These proposals are interesting. An advanced workforce development, cut taxes for family and small businesses. I'm on board with that. Ensure broadband for access for every Minnesotan. About damn time on that one, if I can say. But that's because the Republicans have blocked that one. Increase educational opportunities, a lot of stuff like that. So good stuff there. But one of them is interesting. It's Walls checks. The Walls-Flanagan budget proposes delivering $700 million in direct payments to Minnesotans through Walls checks. Over the past 2 years, Minnesotans have continued to drive the state's economy forward. As a result, Minnesota has a historic surplus. Governor Walls and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan proposed distributing Walls checks to up to $350 for Minnesotans. Single tax filers earning up to $164,000 would receive a payment of $175. A married couple filing jointly earning up to $273,000 would receive a payment of $350. More than 2.7 million Minnesota households would receive a Walls check under the proposal. Let me just say this. You already know that this proposal has made every Republican furious for two reasons. One, during an election year, that's actually a good plan, especially if you got the money to do it, which we do. So now the Republicans, if they're going to do this, are going to have to say, no, we don't want to give money to these people. I want to give you a Walls check. Oh, God, that's actually a pretty good plan. And actually, I mean, that's money. I mean, it for a lot of people out there, a married couple getting an additional $350. You know, they're making $40,000 a year, $350. That's covering some bills. That's paying off some debt. That's maybe even taking a weekend holiday vacation. How nice for that. A nice weekend away. The other thing that's going to be furious for Republicans is, how dare you not give every dime of this to the top 10 wealthiest people in the state? They bankroll our election campaigns. How dare you? They're the those poor people are only surviving off $1 million a week. How dare you deprive them of that $350? You already can see it. I love when Republicans come on out there and say, you know, someone who makes $500,000 a year, they're really living check to check like anyone else. Dude, if you're making $500,000 a year and you're living check to check, you can't spend money to save your ass. You are horrible with money. You're like Brewster's Millions, only there's no payday on that one. All right. So in case you're wondering, I still have yet to show the photo. I will. I'm not going to do it now. I'm not going to do it in the news break here because I got Democrat of the Day, Senator Lindsey Port. I do not want to have the senator come on the show. And the thing I showed beforehand is a picture from me from 1991 wearing a towel and all aberrific. So I won't do that. But I will sometime in the next hour during this, I'll actually show you that photo. So if you want to see it, you have to go and watch on the live stream because I'm not going to post this anywhere else. You have to watch on the live stream. Go to AM 950 Radio on Facebook. Go to Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show on Facebook. I will at some point show you the photo. Ta-da! 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I'm willing to show it, but not share it, because, well, I don't know. I'm not ashamed of how I used to look. I'm a little, you know, wow, what happened to me today? But at the same time, I don't look bad, but I'm also 22 years old in that photo, so I'll let you see for yourselves. Hour two is coming up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We will be talking a little bit about the latest revelations in the case with Sheriff Hutchinson coming up here in just a little bit. Also, at some point, just watch the show on Facebook. You'll see that photo. I'll put that up there on the screen. But we have had the triumphant return of Democrat of the Day. Tuesday, we had Ken Martin on from the DFL. Yesterday, Kayla Berg, a representative from 56B. And joining us also from District 56, the senator from that district, is Lindsey Port, and one of my friends and one of the just most wonderful people I know. A lucky district is 56 to have Lindsey Port as their senator. She's kind enough to join us and talk about their first year in office and the upcoming election. Senator Port, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thanks so much for having me, Matt.
Thanks for coming on back. I'm very glad you're here. The, I should mention, someone asked me this question and they're like, wait a second here. Didn't we just elect the senators? I don't think we've ever actually talked about it. Because of the census and because of the redistricting, the Senate is back up for re-election this upcoming November, correct?
That is right. We get the lucky honor of running again after just 2 years.
Now, will you have to run again in 2024, or will you then be in a four-year term?
Nope, then it'll be 4 years. So it's 2 4-year terms, but then after that, it'll be another two around the census again.
Ah, joy. That's always, because there's that's always the best part of being a politician, I can already tell you. Actually, let's talk about the best part of being a politician. Although with the Republican leadership in the Senate, it's not been that great. You have actually been able to be in the Senate for a year here. Let's talk about some of the things you've experienced and some of the accomplishments that you've been able to make as being a senator in the Minnesota Senate.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I would say actually my favorite part of being in the Senate is closely tied to my favorite part of being a candidate, and that's talking to the people of my community. That part of my job is the best part of my job because I think it's both how we get the best candidates, but it's also how we get the best legislation by working with those in our communities and who are really closely connected to issues. So last year was a weird year to be our first year in the Senate because the Capitol was closed. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of virtual meetings. It was committees were all virtual, and the Senate was pretty empty. It was just us there. So, you know, this year we're still not really sure what to expect, but I am, you know, we found a lot of ways to connect with our constituents and folks all over the state, and I hope we'll be able to do more in person this year, but certainly everybody's safety is paramount. So we'll still be being creative and finding ways to get people connected even when we can't be there in person.
The one of the things that's interesting, I talked to Representative Berg yesterday, and I asked her how the remote sessions, you know, how did she feel? I mean, it was kind of hard for her to gauge because that was her first term there. But I said, did you feel like it was hampering your ability to legislate? How do you feel? I mean, the Senate, was it a case where you feel as if you were able to accomplish what you needed to accomplish there, even though it was remote?
You know, I think we were able to accomplish quite a lot last year. You know, we passed historic funding in housing and great work in education. But I will say that the Capitol is one of my favorite places in Minnesota. It is filled with the people like it's supposed to be. And I think last year with having the Capitol closed, it really kind of let the political games take over a little bit because the people weren't there. The halls weren't filled with them. We literally couldn't hear the people's voices. But for a lot of us, myself certainly in this, we worked really hard to make sure that still what we were hearing was connected to our community. We did a lot of virtual town halls and community groups, roundtables, things like that, to make sure that we were still hearing those voices. But, you know, it's easy in the legislature for sort of that political gamesmanship to take over, and that felt like it had more space last year to grow because we weren't sort of surrounded by the people and being held accountable in that same way. So I think, you know, with the Capitol closed and with more remote happening, it was up to the legislators to make sure that the voices of our communities were really what we were most connected to. And, you know, that's not a priority for everyone.
Well, and it's interesting. I mean, let's put the kind of the ugliness out there. The Republican leadership in the Senate wasn't exactly, I mean, their mentality on many days seemed to be sit down, shut up, we'll tell you when we want you to talk in regards to the Democrats. And they weren't really willing to work with the other side of the aisle that much, and basically were forcing an agenda through the Senate on their own thing. That was with Gazelka. Do you feel as if the new Senate Majority Leader and Miller is going to have a different approach, or are you kind of preparing yourself for more of the same thing?
You know, I try to be optimistic.
Okay.
I think as, you know, as president, when he was, when Senator Miller was the president of the Senate, he did, you know, try to give some opportunities for fairness. And I hope that that continues as majority leader, but, you know, we'll have to wait and see on that. Unfortunately, we haven't had a lot of interactions over the interim, so I think, you know, the next few weeks, and certainly as we start session on the 31st, we'll get a pretty clear picture pretty quickly.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with Jan Malcolm in the Minnesota Department of Health. I mean, if they walk in the door and the first thing is they're saying we're going to fire the health director in the middle of, you know, as we're, you know, getting through the Omicron variant here, I think it's going to set up a bad tone. But it is election year, and, you know, Republicans love playing politics.
Absolutely. You know, Jan Malcolm has been an incredible leader through a very difficult time in our state, and, you know, protecting her, making sure that we don't have hiccups in the real coverage for care that Minnesotans need, and the access to information is absolutely vital. I would say the same is, very true of our Commissioner of Housing, Commissioner Jennifer Ho. She is a phenomenal advocate, it's a moment when we can't have those political challenges or that political gamesmanship get in the way of access to important programs that Minnesotans need right now. So, you know, I am hopeful that won't be sort of the first thing out of the gate, but if it is, we are ready and prepared to, you know, to stand up and fight for the real good work that those women have done on behalf of our state. And we won't back down on that.
It's got to be hard because let's just be honest. This is how the Republicans are going to operate. When there's a Democrat as a governor and they're in charge of the Senate, they're going to hold their hostages. And as Kurt Dowd, the House minority leader said, perform an occasional execution if they need to, if they feel as if they have to get a point across. The crime is, and they're always going to do that. Whenever that's the case, it's going to be the Democratic governor and the Republicans in charge of the Senate. What they're banking on is if the Democrats get in charge of the Senate and Republican governors out there, that they're not going to behave like them. You know, I think that it's, you know, there comes a point where if this is the new standard, I mean, I understand no one likes ugly politics, but if you're creating two different tiers for whatever party is in control, it makes it for a very difficult chance to be able to govern, especially when you have a Democratic governor.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You know, we hope that we're all playing by the same rules, but, you know, we've seen it this year across the country, especially surrounding democracy, that Republicans are willing to lie to their constituents. And frankly, they're not held accountable for it. So there's no incentive for them not to do that. And it really has poisoned the way that, you know, the trust that people have in government. And I think it's important that we call that out for the lie that it is, because it is seeping in all of these different ways, from commissioners to democracy, to COVID and the preparedness that we have for the pandemic and that we've been able to do for the pandemic.
Yeah.
It's sad, but I think we need to say it out loud because, you know, being honest about that is what allows us to really put it to the voters and say, are you going to accept this? And you know, I have faith in the people of Minnesota. And I think, you know, the more that we can talk about the things that the people of Minnesota need, focus on getting some of those done. I'm hopeful that they won't buy into what the Republicans are selling, and instead buy into investing in our communities and making sure that we have a strong path to a bright future for all of us.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I would love to see the DFL in St. Paul. I'd love to see them run ads in every one of these Republican senators' districts saying, hey, who is the one that was telling you that vaccines aren't necessarily important and masks are not a big deal? I would love to see them, but you did bring up the other point. Their constituents, the people that keep voting for them, they hear the lies, they know they're lying, and it just doesn't stop them. I mean, they themselves are getting the representative that or the representation that they have voted for. And, you know, I don't know how you bust through those lies and make people realize this is not helping, but it's not helping. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's a huge challenge all across the country because it's pretty easy to find the lies at this point. And, you know, I think it's our job continue to reach out all across Minnesota and to say there's a place for you in a better future. What that looks like across Minnesota is different, certainly, but it looks like having a dignified job and being paid, you know, living wages for it, having a safe home that is stable, and, you know, having a good education for our kids. And I think that there are things that we can come together on, and we just need to, you know, continue to push and show that there is hope. I think a lot of people are feeling really hopeless right now. I know after 2 years of a pandemic, it gets to me. But the reality is, like, we are stronger together. And Minnesota is an exceptional state for a lot of reasons, and we have an attitude of exceptionalism here. And we need to live up to that.
I agree with you, but my hope is that the Senate goes back to the Democrats come November, and then we can fix a lot of these problems starting next year, that's for sure. You talked about Lindsey Port is joining us, Senator 56. We should mention that district is Savage, Burnsville, and Lakeville, correct?
That's right. Yep.
And the you talk about, you know your communication with the constituents, because all politics is local. You are talking to the people in 56. Talk about what they're wanting you to try to address this upcoming session.
Absolutely. The number one thing I'm hearing right now is affordable housing. We're hearing it just so deeply, both from homeowners, from renters, from folks who want to become homeowners, that, the cost of housing is just, it's out of reach at this point. And we really need to address that. It's not just in my district, but it's a huge issue in my district. It's something we need to address statewide. And with the budget surplus, I'm really hoping that it is one of our main priorities. We really need to make a massive investment in both new homes and preserving current affordable homes, and also rent stabilization help.
Okay. And I talked a little bit with Representative Berg about this yesterday. That the reason why, is you are seeing the demographics of the district, they're changing. And when I was a kid in the 80s and I was going to high school, Burnsville was, almost a farm community at that point still. There were still, wide open swaths. It has become much more urban. There is, there's jobs, there's people down there. It's a great place to live. I've talked about that. You talked yesterday. Fantastic parks down in your district. I've hiked a lot of them. And they are just wonderful. So it is, it's got an appeal, but you have to make sure that the housing is not just, low income housing apartments or massive McMansions. You have to have an equalized housing program throughout all the levels, correct?
Absolutely. And we have to have opportunities, for folks who are renters and want to become home buyers to have those sort of entry level homes. And those are disappearing. And we really need to make investments in keeping those naturally occurring affordable houses that are a little bit older. We've got to make sure that those don't all get snapped up by investors and turned into, flipped and turned into out of reach expensive housing. We're hearing across the state that investment firms are picking those up and turning them into Airbnbs. And, those are homes that people in our community need. And we need to make sure that we are investing in keeping them affordable for folks in our community. Matt, and I will say too, the district has changed a lot in 10 years. It really, really has. It's really built out primarily. There's a little room yet in Savage, but it is pretty built out. And the demographics of the district have changed too, and we have a much more diverse population. And I see that as an incredible strength for our district. And I think, making sure that we are also looking at everything with an eye to equity, and how are we making sure that all of the, different groups in our community feel like they have a voice and a part in our community is really important as we sort of embark on whatever the new lines around our district will be, that we're finding space to make, make room for everyone to have a seat at the table.
I have a feeling I was looking at when you talk about redistricting, I was looking at the Republican maps. Ah! Yeah, sure. They're going to go along with those. And we are going to be looking at, just the demographics of things and how things are going to shift. There is going to be a lot of opportunity here for the Democrats to indeed pick up the Senate here. It's not that big of a seat majority. And when you look at how the population growth has gone, if the Republicans can't gerrymander the living daylights out of districts, there's going to be some potential there for that. Not only you could get going back in there, and by all means, everyone down in Senate District 56, you want Lindsay Port back in St. Paul for sure. But then you're going back in there in the majority party.
Absolutely. It's so important for us to really get things done for Minnesota. And if we have fair maps, there really is a lot of opportunity for us to pick up some seats. We've got some great candidates all across the state. In those western suburbs, down in Rochester, all the sort of northeast suburbs, there's a lot of opportunity for us to pick up seats. And we've got phenomenal candidates that are working really hard right now. And I'm working hard with the Senate caucus campaign to make sure that those candidates are feeling support and, are able to build the teams that they need in their communities. I love campaigns. I think it's our best opportunity to talk to our communities. And so we're digging in really hard and making sure that not only are we running strong candidates and raising money and doing all of those basic things, but that we're running campaigns that are connected to our communities all across the state of Minnesota.
I know the Republicans got a target on you. They want that seat back. My senator is Ron Latz. Love Ron. He's fantastic. And of course, Cheryl Youakim is my House member. And the reality is I'm feeling pretty good. Both of those guys are going to go back to St. Paul, at least my district. It has a tendency of leaning just a smidge to the DFL side in the Hopkins, St. Louis Park area. But what I will say is this, is that, you know, I'm going to help my local candidates, but here's an opportunity for you. Lindsay Port is probably my favorite politician in the state right now. She is true leadership. She's inspirational. She is just wonderful, and we need her in St. Paul. If you're in a relatively safe Democratic district, great. Help your local person by all means. But if you can, make a donation, volunteer, help out with Lindsay's campaign. Make sure we get her back in St. Paul for Senate District 56. Make the Republicans angry about that. The website people need to go to, Senator, what's the one they should head to?
LindsayPortMN.com.
LindsayPort, LindseyPortMN.com. That's Senator Lindsay Port. Like I said, volunteer. And it's savage. Burnsville and Lakeville. You can do this on any weekend. You can go down and give them a hand. Volunteer, donate if you can. Senator Lindsay Port, Senate District 56. Senator, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today.
Thanks so much for having me, Matt.
My pleasure. Democrat of the day, Senator Lindsay Port. And like I said, probably my favorite politician in the state right now. She truly is very inspirational, and I feel lucky that I actually can call her a friend. I think she's just sensational. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. People enjoying Lindsay Port, Senator Port, on the show. Democrat of the day rolls on. I got a lot of people we got to get to. So I'm going to be busy over the next few months talking to all as many of the Democrats of the day as I possibly can. If you've got a Democratic candidate, and right now, one of the things that I'm looking for is I'm looking for candidates that are not being primaried. There's not a primary going on. Because I want to kind of make sure I get as much time as possible with as many candidates as possible. So if you know a Democrat out there, a DFLer, who is running in a race and they don't have a primary challenger and you want to get them on, let me know. I'll see if I can. I'll make the call. And by the way, if I may, by all means, a Republican can be Republican of the day. I would love it. I got my questions. And I won't just let you just do a rant. I'm not going to let you. I know some Republicans come out there and say, I know he's going to ask me these questions, but I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm just going to start plow through them. Well, we'll pot you down. You don't come on my show and be a belligerent jackass. Let's put it this way. There's only space for one belligerent jackass, and I'm already here. So, no, you can't come here and do that. That being said, I'm going to ask you about who won in 2020. And if you say, well, we don't know, I'll say, yes, we do. And the courts have weighed in every time saying so. And every recount you have done has shown that indeed the election results were the same that they were on that night. And just laugh and laugh and laugh. And then we're going to talk about vaccines. Oh, my goodness gracious. We're going to talk about vaccines. Then we're going to talk about why the Minnesota Senate Republicans refuse to stop allowing white supremacists, the KKK, and Nazis be cops. Because I would say to myself, if I was looking for someone to be a police officer, I don't know if I would want someone who is a white supremacist or a member of the KKK or a Nazi to be a cop. I just don't think that would be a good idea. In the same senses, any person from a hate group or a terrorist organization, probably not the best person to be a terrorist. I'm just going to say it. Probably not. So, if you want to, if a Republican wants to, get in touch with us. I'll make a Republican of the day. Once again, no primaries. But if you want to do it, God, Miss Bill Engelbretson, I was hoping he'd take me up. Find out his hints and secrets for Alaskan fishing. Remember when he did that? That they were doing the negotiations and he took off and he flew off to Alaska to do a fishing trip because he was trying to play tough guy because he was trying to use the Natural Resources Committee to force Governor Walz into getting rid of clean cars, which really Governor Walz didn't have any. Yeah, it was. He's an idiot. I mean, dumb. I mean, a moron. I mean, a jackass. Well, he's all of the above. 952-946-6205. All right. It's time for my moment of shame. Well, in case you don't know, that actually could be the name of this show. Matt McNeil's Moment of Shame. If you want to see it coming up here in this upcoming commercial break, I will pull up the photo. I'm pulling it up right now of me, hunkalicious Matt McNeil from 1990. I think this is 1991. Yeah, that's a whole lot of yeah. Anyway, I'll show it to you. I'm not going to post it anywhere else. If you would like to see it, you need to go right now over to your Facebook page, go to am950radio.com and the live stream there, or you can go over to Progressive Matt McNeil Show and view the horror that's about to encompass your eyes. All right? All right. And I'm going to keep my mouth shut on my own personal photos from here on out. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM950.
Sunshine and a high of 17 above. Next Chapter Booksellers has the hottest titles to get you through these frigid winter nights. Next Chapter Booksellers, Snelling and Grand in St. Paul. More at nextchapterbooksellers.com.
Thanks, Trish. that is a... Patrick, you are going to be the only witness I'm going to talk to on this photo here. You saw, I forced you to take a look at the live stream and watch this. You know, as Brett just sort of said, hey, you have a head of hair. I said, yeah, I got a head of hair on my chest, too, there back then. You know, what was your thought on the disgusting display?
I do not want to have eyeballs anymore after this show.
Mission accomplished. There we go. I'm a radio host. You don't need eyeballs. You just, you know, you'll figure out how the show works. It's like my portrait of Dorian Gray has been painted by that Spanish woman that turned Jesus into the monkey man. So I not quite sure what's going on there. Yeah, there you go. I showed it. That was, how old was I? I was 23 years old, 1991. I was 23 years old. I was in great shape back then. I mean, and it's not that I feel I'm fairly comfortable. I mean, this is not about, I'm very comfortable where I'm at right now. As a matter of fact, as going through this box of stuff and I found all this stuff in there, one of the things actually that came back was, is that, you know, I'm getting cat calls now on the live stream. Thank you guys. No, thank you. You know, I had a lot of fun back then. But I don't have any regrets or resentments, or I don't do a woulda, coulda, shoulda. I'm incredibly happy where I'm at. Have you seen my three kids? They're fantastic. And they like me. And I get to hang out with them. It's a lot of fun. Plus, have you seen streaming services? Those are fantastic. Back when I was a kid, we had four channels. That sucked. Now I can watch basically anything. I like that Cowboy Bebop that was on Netflix. I was kind of bummed by that. So... Yes, Patrick, you want to chime in here?
Well, I was going to say, no, you have 60 channels, 70 channels, 400 channels, and there's still nothing on.
Yeah, well, there's nothing on. Well, yeah, there you go. Yeah, I got news for you. If you watch our live stream here on this station, there's something on there. It's, yeah, disturbing and oiled looking. I don't know. What was I doing back then? I mean, I actually think I'm not nearly as embarrassed about that photo, though, as I am about the British flag one. I can't figure out what I was doing with that when I had the British flag over my head like I was a peasant girl in Bulgaria. I don't quite know what I was doing there, but I was in an art house kind of photo way. I mean, I think that's your 20s. You kind of do stuff like that.
Yeah, we don't know what you were doing either.
I got to tell you, so. This guy puts it in perspective. I'm stationed in the Nuremberg area. We're in Schwabach, just south of the town, at O'Brien Barracks, which is no longer there. That actually got handed back over to the Germans a long time ago. And we would go up into town, and of course, there's this great castle that's in Nuremberg there, and they've got this walled city. It's very cool. And you're up there, and of course, you go up from the main plaza up, you can go up the hill. And of course, there's a lot of, you know, students and stuff that were sit there on the grass of the castle and kind of hang out in the summer. And so I'd wander up there. I even occasionally, once or twice, grabbed a guitar and started playing music out there. Hi, ladies. How you doing? Oh, a guitar? Well, let's see if I remember any songs. Oh, here we go. The sad part is I think the only song I knew was like Smoke on the Water from Deep Purple. Dun, dun, dun. Not exactly the song that you want to play to get in with the ladies. Hello there. Yeah, I had a good time. But you know what? That was then. And I'm having an even better time now if you want to know. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. All right. I'm going to talk about this because we have to talk about this. And Yeah. An hour before he crashed his county-owned vehicle, Hennepin County Sheriff Dave Hutchinson called an Alexandria cab driver asking whether any bars were still open, according to an investigative audio released on Thursday by the Minnesota State Patrol. The trove of released material also contained new information, including that Hutchinson was driving more than 120 miles an hour when he crashed his car and was not wearing a seatbelt. The car's computer data showed. He's lucky to be alive. Hutchinson told responding officers several times that he was not driving. Officers, he was slurring his words and he smelled of alcohol. He pleaded guilty to the misdemeanor offense, driving while intoxicated. His blood alcohol level was 0.13, above the legal limit of 0.8. His 90-day sentence was stayed, meaning he will not serve any jail time unless he violates the terms of his two-year probation. He was fined $610. Douglas County Police also released dash cam footage of the crash scene, which Hutchinson, seated in the car, officer's patrol car, is slurring his word, asking where he is. Douglas County deputy asked his name, and he said Hutchinson replied, Dave. And then he asked, yeah, who said you weren't, you said you weren't driving, right? Hutchinson said, yeah, I didn't drive. Jeremy Zoss, the sheriff's office spokesman, said Hutchinson was not immediately available to comment. Hutchinson's attorney, Fred Bruno, did not immediately respond to email seeking comment. Well, there's not much you can say, is there? Earlier this month, the State Patrol search warrant raised question about Hutchinson's account of the crash. The dash cam video shows Hutchinson telling a Douglas County police officer a cab driver he called had been driving his car, leading police to start inquiries with local cab companies to see if anyone else might have been driving the SUV. In one police interview, Mark Swanson, an owner and operator of Alec Courier, an Alexandria cab company, told Alexandria investigators about a phone call he received at 1:19 a.m., I had a guy call me at 1:20-ish. He asked me, any bars still? Swanson said during one phone call with police, he called me from a 612 number. I said, no, by the time I got there to get to, I got there to get you, they'd be all closed down. He added, I never heard back from him again. Swanson later provided the phone number to police, who confirmed it was indeed Hutchinson's. A second cab company contacted by police said it did not receive a call from the sheriff. Police confirmed that neither cab company drives a customer car for them, as Hutchinson first claimed. People ask all the time, but I don't do it. I tell them, nope, we don't do that, Swanson said. We don't make money doing that. It's not safe. Asked by Alexandria police if Hutchinson sounded intoxicated, Swanson said the man sounded a little intoxicated. Hutchinson crashed his 2021 Ford Explorer around 230 miles east of Alexandria along Interstate 94. Investigators were also unable to receive a urine sample from Hutchinson for nearly 3 hours after the crash. A Minnesota State Patrol who had obtained the warrant for Hutchinson's urine and blood arrived at the hospital in Alexandria around 3:55 was unable to speak with Hutchinson until 4:15. Which means his blood alcohol level, I'm going to guess, was obtained from the urine sample, which means that was 3 hours afterwards. Yikes. I informed Hutchinson that refusal to provide a sample is a crime. Trooper Brian Bunning, B-E-U-N-I-N-G, wrote in his report, I asked Hutchinson if he would like to provide a blood sample or urine sample. Hutchinson said he would like to contact his attorney. I informed Hutchinson again I had signed a search warrant from the judge to obtain a blood or urine. After asking again, he said Hutchinson waited to respond before saying he softly said urine. The urine sample was not collected until 5:15 a.m. because Hutchinson said he didn't need to urinate when the trooper first arrived. Hutchinson, who suffered broken ribs and was hospitalized, has faced scrutiny since the December 8th DWI crash. He has pleaded guilty to driving under the influence and refused to resign, saying he is taking responsibility for his actions and receiving outpatient treatment for alcoholism and mental health issues. In media interviews in late December, Hutchinson said he attended a law enforcement convention in Alexandria, had a few drinks before returning to his room at the Arrowwood Resort. He said he was unable to sleep, so he decided to make a two-hour drive back to the Twin Cities. A majority of Hennepin County commissioners have since called for Hutchinson to resign from his post, but said he will leave it to voters to decide whether he should keep his job. All right. I have talked with Hutch a few times on this show. I like Hutch. I really do. And I stand by my vote for him for Hennepin County Sheriff when he was elected. He needs to resign. This is an error of judgment. I mean, it's, I think we all can agree that when you hear him going 125 miles an hour, here trying to find another bar that he could go to, hear that the blood alcohol level taken well after he had been in the hospital, a few hours afterwards, was, what was it, 1.3. And that was a few hours after, at least that's on the impression I'm getting from this story, and this is from the Minnesota Reformer. This was a few hours after he had been admitted to the hospital. He still was at a 1.3 on his blood alcohol level. And yeah, I mean, for goodness sakes, to give you an idea of what people think about this, they're already, one of the plow names was, that was turned down on the snowplow naming contest was Hutchinson's designated driver, or Hutch's designated driver. I am not going to criticize you in any capacity, shape, or whatever for alcohol issues. That is, you know, that's obviously something that, you know, or mental health issues, by all means, you definitely, you know, those are things that I hope that you can deal with. I've had too many friends that have had alcoholism and alcohol issues. Some of them have been able to successfully get away from that. One or two have not, unfortunately. Mental health issues are, I mean, I'm hoping we've dealt with the stigma to a point on those. You can get the treatment that you need and all our best there. But I just want to focus on three things here. One, you were drinking and driving. Two, you were drinking and driving at 120 plus miles an hour. Holy God. You are lucky you're alive. You're lucky you didn't kill anyone else. You would have, if you would have hit someone at 120 miles an hour, holy cow. But it's also the fact that you were actually calling around, trying to get, specifically called a cab company to try to find out if you could get into a bar in Alexandria to go get some. Hutch, I like you. You're a nice guy and stuff, but this is, you're the county sheriff. You can't make that much of a mockery of the position as you can. I don't quite understand, and we talked about this before with Rachel Brannon, the journalist that was, you know, was somehow directed, let in to this vehicle, photograph it. I don't know what officers try to set this up to where to make Hutch look as bad as possible, but I can tell you anything that came from that photo shoot there, that's not as bad as what actually did happen. Like I said, I think there are some questions there exactly where, like, especially the weed gummies came from, because the guy that investigated the vehicle said the weed gummies weren't there. He would have photographed anything that was going to, you know, alter anyone's mood. But yet when the journalist got there, there were weed gummies in the car, which make whether or not those were moved there. They were placed there to try to make Hutch look bad. And I still stand that there should be an investigation into this, because if we can't trust the police to actually take it seriously when one of their own violates it, I mean, what kind of faith and trust do you have that they are not throwing evidence into other vehicles? What faith or evidence do you have that they're not going to take a journalist into another vehicle? There needs to be a full investigation into how exactly the journalist got the tip, the journalist was brought in there, and as well, if there was someone who planted evidence in that vehicle to try to make Hutch look worse. But that's the crazy part. You can't necessarily make Hutch look worse than what actually happened. The level of integrity I have, I've never been one of these people that's blind faith that no Democrat's ever done anything wrong and no Republican's done everything right. I'm not going to ever be that person. And I'm going to be able to say that I think a rational human being and a good Democrat can look at this situation and say, you know what? He needs to resign. I have appreciated his leadership. I've appreciated what he did, but this whole case, this mistake is not just one mistake. It was a series of mistakes. And once again, we're lucky no one was killed, including yourself, Sheriff. I don't think we need to wait until the election. I just don't think that that's the case. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. I actually do have a crime story to here and fantastic unemployment news for the state of Minnesota that, you know, just the kind of thing that makes Republicans say, oh, we were going to hammer them on the economy being bad, but now it's pretty good. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Located just north of 50th and France, the Great Wall Restaurant has provided a delicious taste of authentic Chinese cuisine since 19...
I've already had a few people ask if I can repost that picture. I'm not reposting that picture. Nope, you got one chance to see it. There you go. I'm not doing that again. 952-946-6205. Two teenagers from St. Paul suspected in at least 20 robberies in the Twin Cities Metro have been arrested after a police chase on Tuesday evening. The two suspects, an 18-year-old man and a 19-year-old woman, meaning they can be charged as adults, were arrested in St. Paul. Well, they should be charged as adults because they are adults. Arrested in St. Paul after fleeing law enforcement on January 18th in a stolen Audi. The St. Louis Park Police Department said in a news release on Wednesday the chase spanned numerous cities, lasted about 45 minutes. Investigators with the St. Louis Park Police Department began searching for the pair after identifying them as suspects in a January 15th robbery. In that incident, the suspects threatened to shoot a woman, then took her car keys at 1:15 p.m., the 2700 block of Louisiana Court South. They then fled in the victim's vehicle and a second vehicle that had been previously stolen in St. Louis Park earlier in the week, the release said. The St. Louis Police Department worked with St. Louis Park Police Department worked with the 12 other law enforcement agencies in identifying the suspects and tied them to 23 other incidents across the Twin Cities, including a first-degree aggravated. Let's check out the list, Johnny. First-degree aggravated robbery in St. Louis Park. Second-degree aggravated robbery in six cities. St. Louis Park, White Bear Lake. Well, they're going around the entire metro here. Roseville, Richfield, Brooklyn Center, and Woodbury. 13 incidents of simple robbery in six places. St. Louis Park, or six of them in St. Louis Park, two in Columbia Heights, well as incidents in Plymouth, Roseville, Edina, and Ramsey County. Attempted simple robbery in Eagan, motor vehicle theft in St. Louis Park, and fleeing police in a motor vehicle in Ramsey County. On January 18th, guys, you guys are going to jail for a while, man. The St. Louis Park Police Department issued a probable cause arrest notice to law enforcement stating the suspects were believed to be driving an Audi TT that was taken in robbery from a woman in the 5500 block of Cedar Lake Road on St. Louis Park on January 16th. Law enforcement spotted the stolen Audi at about 6:18 p.m. on January 18th. So they were like, how stupid are you two morons? I mean, what? I mean, you're criminals, so you're really stupid. But you stole a car and an Audi, and you two dim bulbs decide to go drive around the metro area for a few days? Wow, you're idiots. The suspects fled. They were arrested in the block of Maryland Avenue East in St. Paul, where they found to be in possession of evidence connected to the aforementioned robberies. Okay, wait a second here. You're driving around a stolen car, and you've got all the loot from all your crimes in the backseat. What are you, the Penguin? I mean, curses, Batman. The two suspects were booked in a Hennepin County jail at 11 p.m. on January 18th. Jail records show they've not been charged in the case, but they're going to be. Other incidents with connections in the two suspects in St. Louis Park and other cities are being investigated. Yeah, you're going to jail, and you're going to jail for a long time. And in, let's face it, I mean, it's what I'm starting to think that we're kind of is there's a, you know, these crimes that are happening, it's only a very small percentage of people that are doing it. I mean, these people alone are responsible for how many crimes? Lock them up for a long time. Make an example of these people, will you, please? Minnesota's unemployment rate fell to 3.1% in December. Compared to 3.3 in the month before, the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development announced on Thursday that is Minnesota's lowest unemployment rate since 2019. The decline in the unemployment, we have a better unemployment rate now than we did prior to the pandemic. Wow. Great job, Governor Walz and DFL. Thank you. The decline in the unemployment rate last month was caused by job seekers getting hired. According to Dee, the other points to the pandemic improvements in the employment rate that have been caused by people leaving the workforce entirely. Despite the improvements in employment, Minnesota's labor force participants rate didn't budge. The labor force participation rate is still at 67.7. Some workers have stopped seeking jobs for a number of reasons, including early retirement, concerns over COVID, and the child care issue. We've talked about this. There's a lot of people that are walking away from work because what's the point of working if all you're doing is signing over one paycheck to a daycare provider? I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to say, wait a minute here. I don't have to go work in that job, and I can just stay at home with my kids, and I'm going to basically be in the same position. Ta-da! Trust me, one of the main reasons people are leaving jobs is daycare. The cost of daycare is too expensive. Still, Minnesota's labor force participation rate remains far higher than the national rate of 61.9%. Minnesota also lost 2,000 jobs in December, a decline of about 0.1%. The decrease followed a jump in job growth in November, where the state gained 8,600 jobs. Minnesota lost 416,300 jobs between February 2020 and April of 2020, and has since gained back 307,400 of them, or roughly 74% of the jobs lost. Black workers remain hardest hit by job loss. The unemployment rate for demographic groups has been difficult to track given the volatile labor market, according to Deed. So the agency has turned to adjusted unemployment rates based on a 12-month moving averages. Under the calculation, Deed estimates overall unemployment was about 6.2% and 11.1% for black workers, 2% for the Latino workers, and 5.4 for white workers. So we still have work to do with the black community. Let's not forget that. All right. Native Roots Radio, fantastic show. They are up next. You have a wonderful rest of your day. We're back on a Friday. Until then, see ya.